All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
This time last year, do you remember? Many of us were staying home to prevent the spread of COVID-19, and that meant that a lot of holiday gatherings with friends and family were either virtual or canceled completely. This year, things are a little bit different. Yes, the pandemic is still happening, and COVID cases are high in Minnesota. But many people are vaccinated, and they're planning holiday get-togethers with friends and family members. And even if you aren't spending the holidays with loved ones, you still may be getting invitations to birthday parties, happy hours, and office get-togethers. But many of us are still dealing with the mental health effects of the ongoing pandemic. About half of the people surveyed by the American Psychological Association said that they are worried about adjusting to in-person interactions. So this hour, I'm talking with a psychologist and an etiquette expert about how to manage social anxiety when getting together in groups and dealing with holiday stress during a pandemic. And we're taking your phone calls, too. What questions do you have about social gatherings during the pandemic? Are you planning to get together with friends and family in the coming weeks? Does it make you anxious? What is your strategy for staying socially comfortable when you're around a lot of people? The numbers to call are 651-227-6000, or you can call us at 800-242-2828. You can certainly tweet me as well at Angela Davis, NPR. Let's bring in our guest. We have Dr. Ellen Hendrickson with us. And Ellen is a clinical psychologist and anxiety specialist at Boston University's Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders. She's also the author of How to Be Yourself, Quiet Your Inner Critic, and Rise Above Social Anxiety. She's joining us from Boston. Good morning to you, Ellen.
Good morning, Angela. Thank you so much for having me.
And Lizzie Post is with us. Lizzie is the co-president of the Emily Post Institute and the co-host of the Awesome Etiquette podcast. She's joining us from Vermont. Welcome back to the program, Lizzie.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So, Ellen, I'll start with you. What exactly is social anxiety, and how is it different from just regular anxiety or just stress in social situations?
Sure. I'm glad you asked. So social anxiety is self-consciousness on steroids. So I like to give an analogy. We can all relate to the experience of having a perceived external flaw, like a big zit on the end of our nose, or like having to, you know, go through the afternoon with a mustard stain on our shirt from lunch. And that makes us feel self-conscious. We feel like everyone is going to notice it. People are going to comment. And social anxiety is similar to that, except it's for a perceived internal flaw. There's a perception that there's something embarrassing or deficient about us. So, for example, we might think that everyone is going to think that we're awkward or that we have nothing to say, that we're a big loser, or any of a million other perceived flaws. And we think that unless we work really hard to conceal or to hide that perceived fatal flaw, it will be revealed to everyone around us, and then we'll be judged or rejected for it.
I think
so. That's the definition of social anxiety.
And I should say, I think I'm one of these people, because I think I've been to, like, you know, some parties, some birthday parties and different things. And I realize, like, I don't feel like myself. And I'm very worried about saying something that might be upsetting to someone else, because I'm worried about someone saying something to me or asking me something that might be upsetting. Do you hear that a lot?
Oh, absolutely. Social anxiety is super common. And like many psychological disorders, it exists on a continuum. So, you know, fully 99% of people have had socially anxious moments, embarrassing moments. But then we can get into some more specific numbers too. So 40% of us identify as shy, which is just the colloquial way of saying socially anxious. And so that's a lot of people. That's almost half of everyone. Then if we change the question and we say, have you ever had social anxiety, felt socially anxious? Like, were you awkward as a teenager? You know, were you very shy as a child? Did you hide behind your mom's leg? Then that number balloons up to 80%. Now, that said, 12% of us at some point in life will cross the line into a diagnosable disorder and will have what I call capital S, social anxiety. And that is also very common. It's the third most common psychological disorder after depression and alcoholism. So it's really up there with the big dogs. Mm.
And Lizzie, is this a conversation you're having a lot? People who say they are nervous about social gatherings for a lot of different reasons.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's one of the things we've seen increase, and it might just be that I've been at my job longer now, so I feel like I hear it more. But it's interesting to see how it plays out in terms of etiquette. Things like, I really don't like to be seated away from my partner because I'm experiencing social anxiety, when often a tradition at a dinner party is that you don't seat couples together, so that you do kind of break them up and everybody feels a bit more like individuals contributing to the conversation. But we hear from people saying, I talk to hosts about that because I don't want to be far away from my partner. They help relax me in a social situation, that sort of thing.
Mm. And so what advice do you have for people who are, you know, experiencing dread? Like, they see this date sitting on the calendar. I know I got to go. I want to go, but I'm dreading it.
I think that one of the things that can help, and I will be very curious to hear if Dr. Hendrickson agrees, is that sort of knowing what to expect from a pretty standard social interaction can be something that you lean into. So when I think about good guest behavior, I find that that can often help people have targeted points to be able to look to that might help them refocus rather than being focused on that very nervous or anxious feeling. So if I go into a party where I'm not going to know a lot of people and I just commit to meeting and remembering something about one or two people there, that feels a lot less pressure for me than if I'm going into that party thinking I have to meet everybody or I'm not going to know anybody. And that's kind of.
Lizzie, you're breaking up a little bit. Ellen, I want to ask you another question. What have we seen in terms of the isolation over the past? Wow, it's almost been 2 years now because of the pandemic. All that time alone for many of us, how has that affected social anxiety?
Oh, my goodness. In so many ways. So on the surface level, I think we're simply rusty. We've forgotten how to socialize. But the deeper reason beneath that is because anxiety, especially social anxiety, is driven by avoidance. And we have necessarily been avoiding our normal social lives. So usually we think of the relationship between mindset and action as mindset first, action follows. So for example, we decide we're going to get back in shape and then we take action by going to the gym. But it can, we often forget that it can go the other way. It can go action first and then mindset follows. And that's exactly what has happened during the pandemic. We, again, necessarily started isolating, started withdrawing, started generally acting like we had social anxiety, and, you know, incidentally, also acting like we had depression. And then our mindset caught up. And so we saw ourselves behaving in this very isolative way, and our brains caught up to match. And that's part of why it feels so wrong and weird to gather again.
I love the way you described it. We're rusty at it. Lizzie, do you find that too? We're kind of just, you know, a bit awkward now sometimes in the beginning.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. And I am right in that category. I find myself often saying, boy, I just realized I've been talking about something. I don't know how we got on this tangent or whatever. I feel like I've been ruling the conversation and I shouldn't be. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. You know, I've all kinds of different things. I even feel like my punctuality has suffered, that I, for some reason, it is harder for me to get out the door on time than it used to be, even though I'm spending so much more time at home. But it's, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I say weird things again because I think I'm overthinking it, and I'm like, well, I don't want to ask this. That, oh, your eyebrows look fantastic, and then yes, conversations go into these weird places. So yeah. I'm not alone in that.
No, I'm right there with you. And I think a lot of other people are too. And I think one of the nice things that we can lean into right now is that compassion for this shared experience or the shared awkwardness that we have can really go a long way, both compassion for yourself and for others.
All right. Well, I want to take some phone calls from our listeners as we talk about social anxiety, as we talk about just being nervous and awkward, as we get invitations to gatherings where a lot of folks are going to be there, where it's family or friends or coworkers. What are your thoughts about this? Are you dreading it? Looking forward to it? Are you feeling rusty at it? What are your concerns? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. In Minneapolis, we've got Julie on the phone. And Julie, what's your question?
Oh, hi.
Hi, Julie. We can hear you.
Hi. Okay. You know, I'm a senior, and I've been bobbing and weaving and staying away from people for almost 2 years. I live in a crowded apartment building, and a lot of people didn't want to wear masks, you know, when they're in the hall and when they're in the laundry room and so forth. And now, after almost 2 years, I get a call, and I got to show up at Thanksgiving dinner. And it's going to be crowded, and so I'm kind of struggling with, you know, what's social anxiety and what's reasonable. I know that the 10 and 11-year-olds, they just have been vaccinated. I don't know if it's been 2 weeks. But I'm concerned, you know, I've had friends that have had the breakthrough virus after a few months of being vaccinated.
Yeah.
This is what I'm, now this may sound crazy, but I'm thinking about wearing a mask when I'm not eating. But you know what? I know I'm going to be the only one. And so that'll make me feel even more awkward. So I'm
I would imagine throwing that
out there to get some advice.
I'm sure everyone wants you to be comfortable and everybody is thinking about safety. Lizzie, what advice do you have for Julie who's thinking about, I'm going to be the only one with a mask while we're eating, or, you know, when I'm taking a break from eating?
Sure. I think one of the first things to remember with any Thanksgiving or holiday invitation that you get is that you can say no if it doesn't feel right to you. And that might not be the emotional thing you want to do because you want to connect with these people, you want to see them, you want to share in that meal. But if it's really important to prioritize your safety and your comfort levels around your own safety. And if it doesn't feel like the right event for you, it's okay to say no. When it comes to taking more precautions, so if, let's say you're vaccinated and you're thinking, boy, I haven't been in a crowded indoor space in a while. I would really prefer to have a mask on. That is perfectly okay as a guest. And nobody should be placing judgment on you for trying to protect yourself and ease your conscience a little bit more. When it comes to people who might, you can say, listen, this is the choice that I made for myself to be able to come here and enjoy my time with my family or my friends. And I think that that's a really reasonable and strong answer to give to someone who might be trying to give you a little crud.
Mm. And Ellen, any advice for Julie in Minneapolis who is, you know, for the first time going to go to a group gathering and wants to keep her mask on during the meal?
Yeah, of course. So I just want to validate that that uncertainty is the primary driver of anxiety. When we don't know what's going to happen, we don't know how things are going to go, we don't know what people are going to think of us, we don't know if we're going to be the only one. Of course, that all that uncertainty is going to add up to some anxiety. And so what we can do is to try to increase our own certainty. And if by wearing a mask, we can feel more certain that we are safer and we are protecting others, then absolutely go ahead and do that. And I completely agree with Lizzie that it's her prerogative to do that, and that perhaps even her bravery in doing that will pave the way for others and give permission to others to do that as well, and then she won't be the only one.
Right. Someone may look, oh, well, Julie's got her mask on. Let me pull mine out of my pocket too, right?
Exactly.
You don't know, right? Let's take another phone call as we talk about social anxiety. We're talking with a psychologist and an etiquette expert about returning to these in-person get-togethers. Are you about to be around a lot of people for the first time and you're worried about it for many reasons? Call us at 651-227-6000. In Hinckley, Sarah's on the phone. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. I'm calling because my children are refusing to get vaccinated. And so I feel like that's making my Thanksgiving impossible. I know that they don't want it. And I don't want to be the one to say, Mom made us do it. But there's really good reasons behind it. But they're teenagers already. And so it's not like, you know, I can just lead them by the hand. Let's go do this. You know, it's going to hurt for a second and it'll be fine. So I'm having a hard time convincing them how important it is, and then to be able to attend Thanksgiving confident that, you know, I've done my best. And I did all my steps, so I thought, well, maybe if I did my vaccinating and that they would, you know, follow along, and they just have chosen not to. So am I pretty much, you know, going to be going it alone to a Thanksgiving, because everybody else is going to have their own, you know, prerogatives as to what they've done. But for my own, I don't think taking unvaccinated children is a safe decision.
That's a great point, Sarah. Thank you for calling in. A lot of families wrestling with this one. And, you know, Ellen, what would you say to Sarah about this? We have family members who are not vaccinated, who will be with people who are.
Yeah, no, that's a hard one. And especially with, you know, teenagers, you know, when there is uncertainty, again, we naturally look for the right answer. But, you know, this holiday season, there may not be a right answer. You know, how different families handle, you know, mask wearing or vaccinations. Like, but again, I don't know your teenager's exact circumstances, but there might not be a objective right answer to anybody's gathering questions. But instead, what we can do is we can find the best answer for us. And so for you, like, it makes sense that you're uncomfortable taking unvaccinated kids to a family gathering. That is totally valid and makes sense. And so for you, it sounds like the best answer might be to go it alone, or to talk with your kids and have, you know, an open-ended conversation about, you know, what are your concerns? What, you know, what is going on? Sometimes when we try to convince others, especially teenagers, they dig in, even if we're right. And so it could be helpful to take a step back and to have a more open-ended, questioning, Columbo-like conversation of like, I don't get it. Help me out. Help me understand, and see what their concerns are. So again, find the best answer rather than the right answer.
And Lizzie, what advice do you have about whether or not you take unvaccinated children to social events, family gatherings?
So this is one where, as Dr. Hendrickson has said, that it's really individuals having to make decisions for themselves, and only our caller knows what they've been invited to. So some people are doing things where you've got to take a COVID test and show the host the results. Other people are doing things where they say unvaccinated people need to wear masks indoors if they come. And these are perfectly fine criteria for hosts to set. We're all kind of balancing these comfort levels. But it's also okay for the guests to hear what the host has suggested and say, and if this mom is saying, you know, bringing my unvaccinated kids to a party just doesn't feel right to me, then in that case, I would try to really focus on positive plan Bs that you can work with. So let's say take COVID out of it completely. If your host called up the day before Thanksgiving and said, oh my gosh, I've just come down with as being host, often what people will do is find a way to still share that meal, even though it's kind of going to be sent out as to go from the house that's making the big meal. Or I know last year when we couldn't gather with my sister's family, we ended up everyone kind of pooled. We still did a very potlucky dinner, but it was then all kind of divided up and everyone got their portion to take home, and we did a big call together. Focusing positively on a contingency plan that still allows you to connect with the people that you want to gather with or would traditionally celebrate with can be a way to at least salvage some of that connection and not have it completely feel like you are isolated in a way because you've decided to make a choice like not going.
And I want to take a moment to share what the CDC guidelines are for the holidays this year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC still recommends delaying travel unless you are fully vaccinated. They recommend getting a vaccine if you're eligible in order to protect people who cannot yet be vaccinated, like children under 5, and to avoid poorly ventilated, crowded indoor spaces. Even if you are vaccinated, the CDC recommends wearing a mask in public indoor spaces. And if you're feeling sick or showing COVID symptoms, do not host or attend a social gathering. All right, let's take another phone call as we talk about decisions people are making and how they're feeling about being around a lot of people, maybe for the first time as the holidays approach. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828 as we talk with a clinical psychologist as well as an etiquette expert. We have Marilyn on the phone, and Marilyn's calling in from a Minnesota city. Hi, Marilyn, what did you want to ask?
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, Marilyn, I can hear you. Go right ahead. What's your question?
Okay, good. The question is, what about people that have anxiety about, that are single, that have anxiety about being invited in the first place?
Well, why would you not be invited because you're single? Tell me more about that.
Well, because it's a family holiday, and now people are, you know, restricting a little bit to, you know, more family members, et cetera.
Okay. Have you had this experience in the past, Marilyn, where you felt you were excluded?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Lizzie, what would you say to Marilyn about that? She's worried about whether she'll even be invited.
Oh, Marilyn, first of all, let me tell you that I'm in the single camp as well. I'm on my own. So incredibly good to be invited. My advice is more towards hosts, that you don't want to exclude someone just because they don't have a partner or they don't have kids. In fact, often single people are, especially vaccinated single people, are some of the easiest guests to invite to your home.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I love my single friends. They're the ones that have the good stories.
I know. I wish I lived in Minnesota. So I was like, you come to my house for dinner. We'll do it up. But I think it's a shame. It does sometimes happen that couples tend to look to other couples for socializing. And I've experienced it and also just seen it out in the world. But it's not a given. It's not a rule. It's not something that we should be doing. So if you just are out there and thinking about hosting, think about reaching out to a couple of your single friends to make sure that they have some place to go, someone to be with. I always loved my mother's rule of anytime, especially when we kids were like in college and things like that, that heard of, who just didn't have a place to go on a Thanksgiving, Christmas, later in the holidays, they were always welcome to come and join us. And it has made for some truly wonderful gatherings.
Mm. And Ellen, Marilyn is speaking on a bigger issue. What can you tell us about people who are single being excluded, not being invited to social gatherings because couples tend to invite other couples? Is that a real problem?
Sure. Well, I think, yeah, for single people, that I have absolutely worked with clients for whom, like, that is their perceived fatal flaw, that they are single. And so what we can do there is to look at the broader picture. How many times have you been included? And hopefully that, you know, exceeds the number of times that you have been excluded, and that exclusion is the exception. And so to, you know, our brains naturally zero in on the worst case scenario. And that makes sense because we want to be prepared. We don't want to be blindsided. And so our anxiety naturally, you know, looks to the horizon and zeroes in on that worst case scenario. But what we can do there is ask ourselves, you know, what's the likelihood of this actually happening? And sometimes the answer is it's not very likely. But for Marilyn, it sounds like this actually has happened to her before. And so then we can pivot to, well, how would I cope? How can I cope ahead of time? And perhaps maybe rather than waiting for an invitation, she could either let it be known that she's looking for a Thanksgiving to go to. She could host something of her own or do something else to kind of cope ahead of time to deal with that anxiety. Mm.
And before we take a news break, I want to get in this phone call from Wisconsin. We've got Kat on the phone. And Kat, as we talk about social anxiety and being around people again for, you know, gatherings and parties and things in the weeks to come, we're talking about anxiety. What did you want to ask or share?
Hi. Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite or the other end of the spectrum with this one. You know, with the way that we've been for so long with technology, people don't know how to communicate, period, anymore. And I think when everything seems to constantly revolve around COVID, and obviously I'm not downplaying it, but I think the more that we come out with constantly blaming COVID for things or pointing at COVID. We haven't known how to communicate with each other for years because everybody is texting. Nobody's talking anymore. Mm. And I think that in itself creates so much more anxiety over this COVID than just dealing, you know, just learn how to deal again. Start communicating with people instead of hiding behind a phone or, you know, tablet or whatever.
That's Kat in Wisconsin, and she's saying we were already struggling before the pandemic and effective personal, interpersonal interactions, and that technology has played a role in that. And is that something that you hear, Dr. Hendrickson, a lot?
Yeah, I think to Kat's point is interesting because the pandemic has particularly hit younger people hard. Social anxiety is really surging amongst our young adults because, you know, young adulthood is the time to build those social circles. Mm-hmm. Our social circles peak around the age of 25, and then they shrink from there over a population. Mm-hmm. And so there's been this giant hole punched in this time of life when, you know, when we're supposed to be building those socializing muscles. So anxiety, social anxiety now tells us two lies. So one I alluded to before, one is the worst case scenario is bound to happen. But the second lie that social anxiety tells us is we can't handle it. Like we can't handle the social situations of everyday life. And the way to counteract both those lies is through experience, that the more, you know, social experiences we have under our belt, the more chances our brain has to realize, oh, they didn't laugh at me, or oh, I can do this, or oh, what, you know, what I was worried about didn't happen. And, you know, many teenagers and young adults have this real dearth of experiences now due to the pandemic. And so it makes sense that those lies really, you know, haven't had a chance to be refuted. So, I don't know if that answers Kat's question exactly, but it, I do want to just to validate that mm-hmm. This has been particularly hard on the younger people
and
today.
Yeah, sure. Lizzie, what are your thoughts? With like technology and the role that it has played in making us not very good communicators in the last few years, and also how young people are experiencing all of this.
It reminds me of hearing reports about millennials and Gen Zers who don't want to listen to voicemail or don't want to pick up the phone to call someone and instead want to text. And I think that we have been given a lot of different options for methods of communication, and really determining whether the method you're using is the best method for communicating what you need to communicate makes a big difference. So when you're communicating facts, figures, details, you know, times, addresses, things like that, really great to use something like a text message. But when you're doing conversations, opinions, answering the question why, I think it's much better when you're actually, and especially when communicating feelings, much better when you're having a verbal conversation, if not a face-to-face conversation. Each time we sort of decrease from in-person to video to phone call to text message or email, we end up losing other cues. So you mm-hmm. can't, for instance, see me gesturing right now or the smile
you,
on my face.
You're waving your hands? You're waving
yeah,
your hands
exactly.
right now, Lizzie? Okay.
Waving around. And nodding and doing all that. And the big smile on my face. And you can't see that. Or that I'm distracted and I've looked over to the left or something, you know?
Right.
And so it's really important to be aware of the method and what we're trying to communicate and whether this method is the best one.
We're talking about social anxiety with a psychologist and an etiquette expert. What questions do you have about getting through social gatherings during the pandemic? Are you planning to get together with friends and family this holiday season? And does it make you nervous and anxious? What is your strategy for staying socially comfortable when you are around a lot of people? You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. Now back to the conversation about how to manage social anxiety during the holiday season. My guests today include Dr. Ellen Hendrickson, a clinical psychologist and anxiety specialist at Boston University's Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders. She's also the author of How to Be Yourself, Quiet Your inner critic and rise above social anxiety. And Lizzie Post is on the line. Lizzie is the co-president of the Emily Post Institute and the co-host of the Awesome Etiquette podcast. And we're taking your phone calls, talking about handling social gatherings during the pandemic. What are you worried about? Are you planning to go at all? What is your strategy for staying comfortable when you're around a lot of people? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Let's talk to in Minneapolis, Emily, who's on the phone. Good morning to you, Emily.
Good morning.
Hi.
I've had social anxiety, especially around big groups, pretty much my entire life. And a strategy that works for me really well is to make sure that I've had like a nap that day and make sure that I'm really well rested and that my self-care is at the max, because then I'm able to stay present and stay, you know, and not be thinking about like the body sensations of I'm tired, I have a headache, you know, all of that. I can be present with the conversation and sharper and more responsive, you know, especially when like groups like, you know, the volley of conversation goes really quickly, mm-hmm. I'm able to keep up better.
Mm-hmm. Because Angela might be there asking you about where you get your eyebrows done, right? You don't know what you're going to run into.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, Emily, exactly. It's draining for you. You say you take a nap ahead of time because it drains your energy once you get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot from a lot of my friends. And Dr. Henderson, what do you hear in what Emily's describing?
Yeah, no, I think she's hit upon something really important. And to max out that self-care, make sure that, you know, we go into things that are draining for us well rested. One technique that a lot of my clients have found really useful, that surprisingly takes less energy than you'd think, is to turn your attention outward. So in a socially anxious moment, our attention naturally turns inward. You know, we get self-conscious, we start to focus on ourselves. And that's when we start to overthink things like, you know, would I look more casual with my hands in my pockets? Or, you know, should I lean against this wall? Or, oh my gosh, did what I just said sound offensive? We start to overthink things and we really turn our attention inward. So what we can do in a socially anxious moment or a gathering is to turn our attention outward to the task at hand, which is listening closely to whoever we're talking to, you know, being present in the moment, basically paying attention to anything except ourselves. And that outward focused attention, clients have told me, not only makes them feel less anxious, makes them feel more connected, but also is easier than trying to deal with all the commentary and body sensations that Emily alluded to in a socially anxious moment.
So Ellen, are you suggesting like maybe getting together with another person and talking about other people at the get-together, taking the focus off of yourself?
Well, just when you're, okay, let's pretend you're in conversation, mm-hmm. to focus on them, to focus on the other person, like listen closely, like what, you know, to focus on what they're saying, mm-hmm. really listen, rather than kind of getting distracted by our own inner workings. Mm-hmm. So it keeps us grounded in the moment and present in the situation rather than in our own heads.
And Lizzie, as we talk about techniques to try to get ahead of feeling anxious once you get to a gathering, Emily says she just takes a nap beforehand because she knows it's going to take her energy. Mm-hmm. Do you give that advice or do you hear that as well from other people that works?
That's a new one for me, but we'll definitely be considering it and talking about it over on the podcast. I think it was a really great solution, and it was also really nice to hear from someone who experiences like regular social anxiety and has found mechanisms that work for them to help them participate well, and not just only withdraw as a mechanism. And I also love Dr. Henderson's point about engaging in conversation, asking questions, those kinds of things. It reminds me of, there used to be this little story, but like a little etiquette story I would hear where everyone's talking to the host about how Joe was like this great guest at the party. And the host finally calls Joe and says, Joe, everybody's telling me they love talking to you at the party. What were you talking about? And he said, I just asked them questions about themselves.
And it's that, you know, Joe's not necessarily having to do too much work, but when you ask a question and you allow someone else to open up and you can put that focus over there, I thought it was really cool to hear Dr. Hendrickson say that that is an actual tool for trying to remove the focus from your internal thought and dialogue and be able to both connect and get your brain to a different space that's more of a social space.
So Joe's over there asking questions, but then he's then listening. He's really paying attention and listening.
He's listening to the
people.
Answers. Yes, right. That's a really good point, Angela. He's listening to the answers.
Okay. Did anybody get Joe's number? Because he sounds like a great guest. We could invite to all the parties. All right. Let's take another phone call as we talk about social anxiety and getting ready for these get-togethers where you got to work on, your in-person interactions and how you're communicating with people again. A lot of folks are rusty at that right now. Call us at 651-227-6000 as we talk to an etiquette expert and a psychologist. In St. Paul, Julie's on the phone. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. I just wanted to put out there what I'm planning to do for Thanksgiving this year and trying to navigate all the social situations. I'm lucky that my immediate family is vaccinated, and so I have no issues gathering with them. But unfortunately, there are my brother and sister's in-laws who are also in the mix this year who are not vaccinated. So, rather than feeling insecure or not wanting to be the only person in the room wearing a mask, I decided to not attend Thanksgiving this year, but, make my own plans with them separately so I can still spend the time with them, but also, not feel anxious and, do my own thing.
And so, Julie, how do you find out, like, who's vaccinated and who is not? I mean, are those conversations that are happening in your family? Like, how do you know they're not vaccinated?
I asked and in one situation I asked and I was told that somebody wasn't. And then in the other situation, they offered the information to us. And so we can make our own decisions on what we wanted to do. Mm.
Thank you, Julie. Lizzie, so this is creating a lot of awkwardness, but also, some family, rifts are happening here, I would imagine, with mm-hmm. people choosing not to come. So if you decide that you don't feel ready, you're not comfortable with holiday get-togethers this year, is there a polite way to decline the invitation and then not have everybody mad at you?
Yeah, I think that the best way to do it is kind of twofold, but it's to really think about, rather than making a stand with your, I'm not coming, I don't feel safe, even though those are the reasons that we are going to say no, I'm not going to feel safe at this event, it's not for me. Rather than putting a lot of judgment or defensiveness up when you're trying to communicate that, instead, a nice, calm, and clear, and a gracious, remember, you've been invited to something, mm-hmm. a gracious, it doesn't sound like that's going to work for me, but I would love to connect with you in the ways that we could or that would feel comfortable for me. And I feel like that is, you're immediately shifting the focus onto the positive ways you can connect rather than keeping the focus on the reason why you don't feel that the situation you've been invited to is right for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more we can do that with relationships that we want to build, that we want to maintain, the better off we will be through this truly awkward little moment that we end up in. And I say little, but I know it's pretty severe for some folks. And so, again, focusing on what are the ways that we could connect safely? Is it, again, those plan Bs we discussed earlier, sharing the meal but not eating it together? Is it just doing some kind of a Zoom call? Is it, but I don't know, we're all going to wear the same color sweater. I don't know. So pick something that allows you to connect in some way, and lean into that, feel really good about that you are both maintaining your own safety, your own comfort levels, and you are reaching out, trying to find ways to connect.
And Ellen, is there a polite way to decline an invitation just because, for many reasons, like you don't feel it's safe, you don't want to be exposed to people who are not vaccinated? Is there a way to, to not cause harm, but simply feel like you're protecting yourself?
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely important and necessary to, you know, set our internal boundaries. If you think about a boundary on the map, that is the line between something where something starts and where something ends. So same for us. Our boundaries are the line between what we're willing to do and what we're not willing to do. And so I really like Lizzie's answer about focusing on connecting. I think that, you know, even pre-pandemic, holiday socializing was hard enough. And now we have to navigate, just like Julie, our caller, we have to navigate vaccine status, we have to navigate booster status, mask, do we hug? You know, no one alive today has ever emerged from a global pandemic. So, you know, it makes sense that no one knows, like, exactly how this is supposed to work and that there is a lot of, you know, conflict and uncertainty. But I think that it is important to put connection first and to find ways to connect, even if we are going to avoid that gathering because of safety concerns.
I'm glad you mentioned hugging, because that's one that I've been struggling with. How do we handle the hug? The way I do, I ask people, like, can I touch you? Can I hug you? Are you comfortable if I, you know, try to hug you? And that's kind of awkward, but I feel necessary. Or should we just not be trying to touch people who are not in our immediate families? Lizzie?
I got to say, I think that when it comes to hugging, we should probably have been asking for those hugs all along. It's a really personal thing. It's a really close thing. It's a full body contact thing. It's worth asking that quick question and getting to a place where it doesn't feel uncomfortable for you to ask it. You know, hey, is a hug welcome? And if they say, you know, I'm not hugging right now, or I'm not a very huggy person, then you reach out for that handshake, you give them the high five, or you give a really friendly wave and a big smile, you know, whatever, you know, it's, you just accept the answer that comes and move forward with it. But I think that the pandemic has then gotten us really used to asking whether or not we're in a place of our hugs, handshakes, high fives, welcome at this point. And I think we're going to be doing it for a little bit longer. I don't think any of these greetings are dead or gone or won't be revived. But I do think that we ask about them now just to respect other people's comfort levels.
And Ellen, we should acknowledge, too, that for many people, they're living right now with a lot of grief and a lot of loss. There are a lot of people who have lost family members because of COVID-19. And so they may not be interested in large social gatherings at all for a while. And that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, the pandemic has brought us all sorts of, you know, capital T traumas and lowercase t traumas for 2 years now. And I think the result is that we all need to ask and be, you know, very open about how do we do this? How can we navigate this to maximize everybody's comfort and inclusion, whether that is asking about a handshake or a hug or inquiring about, you know, how are you doing? I think this is an objectively awkward and unusual time. Nobody knows the right way to navigate this. And so I think the best thing we can do is ask.
And I do remember, you know, reading a lot of stories about social anxiety around maybe May or June when vaccines were becoming widely available. A lot of folks were getting vaccinated. Restrictions were lifting before the Delta variant began to dominate the news and continue the spread. So did we, you know, was there anything learned there? I mean, is social anxiety still as much of a widespread concern now? Because some people have had some experience of being back, you know, in these group settings. Ellen?
I think it depends on personality. I think those of us who are naturally a little more reserved or anxious or introverts might not have taken those steps out yet. I think those of us who were raring to go, who have been, you know, waiting and chomping at the bit, the extroverts among us may have taken more steps to start socializing. And so we're all at a really different starting line at this point, which I think just makes it even more important to try to navigate all that uncertainty. And again, to ask, you know, how do we do this? Do we hug? Do we shake hands? But also for those of us who maybe are at a starting line a little farther back, to remember that, you know, getting our socializing muscles back in shape is kind of like getting our actual muscles back in shape. So, like, for example, if you've ever broken a bone and you've gotten a cast off, like, your muscles have really atrophied. And so we need to take it slow. And that goes for, you know, reemerging from this pandemic with social anxiety, that it's okay to I use this analogy a lot, but it bears repeating. It's okay to inch your way into the pool. You don't have to do a cannonball into the deep end. But you know that you know slowly and steadily you will get it back. There's dozens of points of reentry. It's not one thing. You know, it's not going from nothing to a giant wedding reception or nothing to like a huge Thanksgiving dinner. We can start off with a walk with a friend or gathering, you know, in a small gathering of fully vaccinated people, et cetera, and work our way back up.
And Lizzie, you know, as host of the Awesome Etiquette podcast, how have you seen the topics of conversation sort of change? I mean, from the summer months to the fall, now as we're starting to enter winter, what has changed in terms of how we are viewing the pandemic and living through it compared to, you know, where we were maybe a year ago?
It might just be because summer season tends to be wedding season, but summer, it was still all wedding questions. How do I deal with wedding guests? I've been invited to a wedding and I don't know if everybody's going to be vaccinated or what the rules are. I mean, it was a whole lot of wedding stuff. And of course, in the winter, so much of our focus is on the gatherings, the holidays that we celebrate. If your holiday is a gift giving holiday, we get a lot of questions about gift giving. But this year we have seen a lot of questions still about how are we navigating this vaccinated, unvaccinated divide, and how can we do that, you know, with the most grace and politeness towards the people around us.
All right, let's take one more phone call before our time is up in Spooner, Wisconsin. Blake is on the phone. Good morning, Blake. What do you want to share with us in our last 2 minutes here?
Good morning. I just, as someone who has never really dealt with social anxiety, I've been curious listening to you all. I just want to know how I might be able to accommodate people who might have social anxiety better, because it's not something I generally think about.
Blake wants to be a good friend. Ellen, how can he be a good friend? We've got about a minute left here.
That's a wonderful question. I'm glad he asked it. So oftentimes we tend to want to accommodate people with social anxiety, and that can be wonderful. And so we can ask, how can we make you more comfortable? But absolutely, still invite them.
Yeah.
And be their champion. If you sense that they want to come but might feel hesitant, you can give them some more certainty, maybe tell them who's going to be there, maybe give them a pep talk of, you know, remember last time you came, you had a really nice time. Or remember, you know, the first few minutes are hard, but, you know, then I remember you got into it last time. So to balance accommodating without enabling, and to really be their champion.
I love it. Thank you, Blake, for that call. And thank you to our two guests for the advice you shared with us today. We've been talking about social anxiety and handling group get-togethers with Dr. Ellen Hendrickson, a clinical psychologist and anxiety specialist at Boston University's Center for Anxiety and Related Disorders, and Lizzie Post, the co-president of the Emily Post Institute and co-host of the Awesome Etiquette podcast. Thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you to all our listeners. Remember, it is Give to the Max Day. Show your support for NPR by going to nprnews.org. Today's conversation was produced by Samantha Matsumoto. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.